The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
World building an entire world is huge amount of work when it comes to role-playing games.
Yeah.
What if, with just a click of a button, you could have world maps, regions, cities, towns, and so much more already plotted out in just seconds? Well, did you know, with Asgard's fantasy map generator, you can do just that.
I did, because I read the notes ahead of time.
Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
And I'm your co-host, Brandon.
We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure. And today, we're going to be talking about Asgard's fantasy map generator. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, it's a generator, blah, blah, blah. Holy crap.
Asgard.
One of the single most amount of time invested in a game is usually building and fleshing out the world around you, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So what if you had a tool that kind of automated the process, but still gave you the versatility of changing it to the way you want it?
Yep.
So it gives you the framework and gives you great detail, but you can replace that detail pretty easily, right?
Yep.
So that's the biggest turnoff I've had with a lot of world generators I've seen so far.
Yes.
Is that you can't change the way it looks or anything.
Yes. I mean, besides refreshing and changing it out right away. And I think Asgard's really does away with that, right?
Yep.
In a multitude of different ways that just kind of blew my mind. So there are thousands of map generators that I've played with in the world, and Brandon nailed it on the head. So I want to talk a little bit about what Asgard does and why I think it's the best tool for dungeon masters, regardless of what RPG you're playing. For me, fantasy makes the most sense, but it's not limited to that, right?
Nope.
And I think that that is fantastic. So what does it do?
It generates maps.
Well, that's one thing.
To be fair, to be specific, it generates like maps for like the world map. Not necessarily maps of individual cities or maps of dungeons, but like a map of the overall location.
It does
cities?
Maps for the cities too.
Oh, then I'm wrong.
See, I told you that was one that I stumbled across the fact.
Does it like add cities, trade routes,
it
and
does.
Stuff?
So let's get into it. Well, of course, because it's automatically generating the world map, there is a lot that gets created. Immediately, the map created is an overview of a given grid, as Ian had pointed out, which I think is good.
Yeah.
And you can see major kingdoms and their borders, which is awesome already, because it's not just a map with a topography, which it also has, including elevation details down to rising sea levels and stuff, which is really, really cool. I do like the art style. Immediately comes off as watercolor, which I think is pretty cool. The other thing that I really think is very interesting is that now that you've got this really beautiful art style, it makes it great already presentable map to your players. So you can print this off and plop it up, and it looks gorgeous right out the gate, right?
Yep.
Which is, I think, is a big one. Now it also adjusts the colors of the different like kingdom areas right out the gate, so you can tell just at a glance where the kingdom lines are and the borders are without actually seeing lines.
Kind of like territories?
Yes. Yeah. It's very cool.
You can even choose like the map format too. Like old-timey maps, Modern Road Atlas, and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Which I think is really, really cool.
You know the map I showed you last night during the game, right?
Yeah.
Yes, but they don't.
They don't. But you remember how intricate, how colorful it was and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's four different maps, versions of that map.
Okay.
It took me like a month and a half to get those.
I made one better in a second.
I was going to say, how fast will that generate it?
I made one better in a
damn
second.
Damn it.
Now, that's not to say that adding your own flair and taste isn't totally not there. You do have some creative freedoms, but the things that I want to talk about is taking away the massive workload and using it as a template, right?
Okay. And Michael asks, is it possible to use an existing map idea from a picture file?
I think so. But I cannot confirm because I'm still learning this program.
And I at least have not seen a feature like that. Yeah.
I haven't seen it. But there is a Patreon that this creator has, and they welcome suggestions, which is why it's gotten as complex as it is. It's feedback from the people that support it, which is also why I think it's one of the best, because you're adding features that people want, right?
Yep.
Now, as if it wasn't creating it enough was already cool, it automatically names everything.
Yep, and can change those names too.
Yes, and what's cool is there's like a drop-down menu to set the theme. So you have like German or Icelandic or, you know, French, and you can pick those themes to cover your entire world, right?
Yep.
But what I think makes it really cool is there's a naming, basically a naming box, and you can type in your own custom naming conventions, and it'll kind of mix and match them, I think, which I thought was pretty cool. Yeah. If I'm understanding that, which is nice.
What the hell?
What?
This map is super detailed.
Yeah, it's probably because, yeah, it's insane. Yeah. And so now that you've got the kind of naming conventions, I really think that that is not even the coolest thing that it does, but you can easily rename them.
Yep.
So you can get, or even change them up from what they exist as.
And I do think it's worth mentioning too, that if you can go to the web link, you can generate a map there. Mm-hmm. But you can import the map, and you can also download the map generator itself onto your computer because it's all on GitHub.
Yes. Oh, my God. I almost forgot about that. There's a little link in the corner to install it.
Yeah.
Oh, it does 3D vision, too.
3D maps!
Yeah,
look at that!
Yeah, that, too. It looks really cool. It also does a globe.
Globe?
But we really want to get to the first feature that really set it apart, and that was me, is when you click on the button for biomes, it automatically maps the world's biomes for you.
Handy.
So it tells you where it's cold, what the temperature is. Is it temperate? Is it what is the precipitation? The humidity levels? All that stuff is automatically generated, which I think is amazing. Awesome. The fact that you get the split in the biomes is really, really cool, right?
Yep.
Each one is color-coded, so as you're looking at it, you get ease of reference, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that's important whether you're looking for swamps, because you decide that you want your adventure to take place in a swamp. You don't have to figure out where you got to go. You just select the biome and say, oh, here's all the swamps. And it's always consistent.
Yep.
Which is really cool.
Now, the nice thing about this world is, I know a lot of people suggest when you start D&D games to start small, build your way out.
Mm-hmm.
And you can start small in one location on the map and branch out to the map, and you know, already know it's there.
Oh,
to a point.
Yes, I like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that alone is already a feature that I hadn't seen in any other map generator. And hopefully, if you guys are playing around this, if you find something, please let us know and share with what you think it is. The other thing I want to talk about is it delves into the sheer variety that you can do is just amazing. But not only the biomes, but you can go beyond that into things such as population distribution. It tells you where it's most likely to have the highest population distribution, and it lines up with what you'd expect.
Yep.
Super cold places have a smaller population.
Like Greenland.
Huh? Yeah, right. And in very hot places have a smaller population, and it distributes it worldwide. So you kind of get it expands even beyond that into more than just the population, but you can even do which cultures live there, which creatures, races, however you want to, you know, and it even can shift them. You can say this is entirely elven, or maybe it's 2% humans, or in 98% elven, or whatever, or 1% other. There's a lot of variation there.
Yep.
What was something that stood out to you when you were playing with it?
Just how closely I can zoom in, considering how wide it is when you start out.
Oh, yeah. So you actually make a really good point there. So when you're using the program, you can zoom in, and as you zoom in, it generates more details. So not only do you get city names, you also get features such as kingdom routes and travel routes and caravan like stuff and rivers and all these different things that are just generated as you're going through it, which I think is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But it gets even more detailed than that. One thing that D&D and all fantasy games typically have is some sort of religious, right? A religious sect, right?
Yep.
Well, it does that for you too. Not only does it generate religions, it tells you the distribution of where they're mostly focused, what their capital, what is their prime deity, and it breaks it down into a nice little chart in different color schemes. And it goes even farther than that by giving them diplomatic relations between the cities they're in. So you might have one kingdom that's a theocracy, but might not be friendly to this other one, you know, that's militaristic. And it creates these diplomacy charts that tells you who they're allied with, who they hate, who they're neutral with, and kind of somewhere in between, which I thought was really, really cool.
Yeah.
That's a lot of detail.
Yeah.
Especially for how fast it comes up. It
generates very quickly. Yep. And that means the amount of – and it's all customizable, which I think is really great.
And kind of going on the political and faction stuff too, it definitely goes into some detail, including like the military might, what kind of forces they have. So it's like infantry, cavalry, naval fleets.
Yeah. It breaks down the actual population of the militaries.
And can even have a ring there for war readiness.
Which is just amazing. The different war readiness is something like DEFCON 3 or something like that, which I thought was a bit of a cool feature, right?
Right. Now you want to put the game DEFCON all over again.
So I had this thought, right?
Okay, let's hear it.
You know how you zoom in really close and you start to see all the cities, right? Mm-hmm. What if a city is the world that you started on? Could this be used for like a Spelljammer map?
Yeah.
Yes.
And every city's a new planet?
Yeah.
Yes. So the other thing that I want to notice, as you zoom into cities, the cities are broken down into points of interest, strengths, special features, people of import. Was built on rock and roll. Sure. And so for me, that's really cool because you don't have to generate special points of interest. You can just dictate to your players, here's the things that you can expect in every major city.
Right.
But when you go to those cities, this generates the very, like, the world's greatest smith or something like that.
Yep.
Which I thought was really cool.
And you can change the features too as desired. So,
which, once again, is that more customizable thing. And each iteration of the location displays and breaks down the culture that's there.
Yep.
Is it a theocracy? Well, we talked about theocracy already, but is it a, you know, a feudal system, or is it a democracy? Is it a an authoritarian you know, regime? All that stuff gets broken down, and when you generate it, it also generates a map of the city. And you don't like the map, there's a little button. You can just click it, and it'll give you a new one, which I think is really, really cool.
Does it supply chain of command, and do maps change based on the adventures? You can edit the maps
As you want. So I would say that is a true statement. It doesn't do it automatically, as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
But every time I play with it, I realize it does more than I thought it did, and it's ever-growing.
Yep.
The other thing that I want to touch on that I think is really cool about this is each system automatically generates a banner or an emblem for the military, for the religions, for the cultures, which I just think is amazing. So on the fly, you can show the players the emblem of the, you know, the red cloaks or something like that, you know, here's what it looks like. And then you print it off and that's what it is. Or you can go in and edit it on the fly, just like you can other, stuff. But instead of editing text, you can edit the emblem, which I think is really cool.
What else I've noticed is the little city maps are based on seeds and the seed digits are 13 digits long. So that's a lot complex of cities.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Which once again is a pretty neat and cool feature, and you can adjust the different features that are there. If you want a river to be wider, you want it to split off, you want to make this elevation of this area higher in the mountains, you can poof, there's a mountain, which I think is, once again, it's just a phenomenal overall resource, I think, which I mean, you're talking, the amount of data that you get is just mind blowing. And the fact that it's generated in an instant and you can edit it, it really just sets it a cut above the rest. So as we're going through this, Brandon's seeing it really for the first time, aside from the snippets I took for the show. What's going through your mind as somebody that just looked at this? And if you're in chat and looking at this for the first time, tell us something that's really blown your mind and something you like about it right out the get-go.
We had the link shared earlier, so.
Mm-hmm. One of the most outstanding things that stand out the most in the program so far that I've always had an issue with is city maps.
Okay.
You zoom in and you click on a city, and every city, it's different. They don't even look the same. Like how you see generic cities and old RPGs, and then you go to the next one's like, oh, this one's just this one's blue, while that one back there was red. It's mm-hmm. the same thing. They're all different.
That's funny.
Yeah, I was trying to really map. They had the huge polar ice cap, apparently.
That's cool. And what's interesting is it doesn't have to be. You don't have to use it to create your own world. You can use it as a jumping off point every time you play. Maybe you use it to create the first city that the characters or village or town that the characters start in.
Print it out, throw a dart at it. That's where you guys are.
It could be as simple as that. Now, as you do that, you're going to have to customize whatever's in the new world to fit that. Yep. But the fact that you can save each one of these worlds is a powerful creative tool, especially with the naming conventions. I know they're constantly adding new ones, even yep. the fantasy ones like Dwarvish and Elvish. Which I think is really cool. The one thing that I think I would have liked to see work a little better, because I can't say that it doesn't have some flaws. I mean, it's got some amazing work into it, but there's a button, and it might be new, so it might be under development, but there's a button to turn it into a globe. But when you click it, all it does is stretch the map over the globe, and it doesn't even go all the way.
On mine, you saw a globe, and then there's just a square image.
Yeah, right, but once again, I think that might be something new that's under development, maybe.
Yeah, and I just, like I said, within like a few seconds, I just started a new map, and I zoomed in on a city, and I clicked on the city, and the city had its own logo, a general layout for the city itself, the name, the population number, the temperature, how high it is above sea level.
Those are amazing pieces of detail. Yep.
And the level, and the logo, the shield, if you will, is like a blue shield with three loots. So...
That's cool, because you can take inspiration from that.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's funny is the two cities I was looking at, I was showing you, the larger city is an orc city, and the smaller one is a dwarven city, and they're like right next to each other.
That seems like strange, but hey, I've seen weirder, I guess. Thomas Kelly's got a really good statement here. Yeah, can you print the maps? Yes.
Yeah. And shoot, when Jerry to say it, told me what kind of culture it is, which had a drop down menu. You can edit those cultures individually too. So yeah.
Yes, and so this is why I consider the Asgard's fantasy map generator the best world building tool for dungeon masters.
I think it's safe to assume this is more optimized for your PC than it is your phone.
Probably.
Well. Yeah, that's usually how it goes.
Imagine like, you're trying to generate all kinds of random content. The reason I think this is great is because the less time you're spending on fleshing out the overarching world stuff, the more you can focus on the individual players and the story you're trying to tell at that moment. And when you need something that comes up, hey, I need two warring factions. Oh, this already generated it for me. It's these two people. I don't really like this name. Random. Oh, I kind of like that one. Actually, I like this one combined with the other one and just change them yourself.
Yep.
And you can have that in seconds. And because it's all saved, there's no accidental missing of consistency, right? Because it's not going to change unless you change it, which I think is good. We want to take a moment to welcome the Majestic Goose Network. Thank you guys. Thank you guys for stopping by as we discuss the... Asgard's fantasy map generator, the best world building tool for Dungeon Master. Anyways, so overall, there is very few map generators out there that are really this detailed. In fact, I couldn't find any. Now, don't get me wrong. That means that I'm not saying that there aren't maps that you can't get to do this stuff, but you usually have to do all the work yourself.
Yeah.
Incarnate's a good example.
And I've definitely seen quite a few good map generators over the years. But this one is definitely one of the better ones I've seen.
Yeah, and I can't think of any that come up with all the details specifically.
Right.
Like, I can find dozens that make better looking maps, perhaps.
Right.
But not going to tell me the population density, the temperature, the sea level, and give me a shield and details on the culture and political and diplomatic relations.
Yep.
That's just it's an amazing detail. So overall, what is your guys's rating on this on a scale of A through E?
I'd definitely give it like a solid A-.
Okay.
I'd give it an A.
Give it an A? I gave it an A+ because I couldn't find anything better.
So the guy yesterday who said A+ aren't a thing.
Hey, you shut your mouth.
It's funny.
Silver Wolf asks a really great question. What about resources? I don't know. I didn't see anything about that. But once again, they have a Patreon, and I think they take recommendations. Yep. So that would be a really cool one. Like, this city specializes in... Actually, I think there is something that talks about they specialize in,
right.
But I don't know if it goes into quite the detail Silver Wolf's asking about.
It also could be there, you just haven't found it yet.
That's also true. That's what I said. Every time I go into it,
yeah.
I find new stuff. There's so many options. I bet
it's probably you click a button and regions start highlighting saying, oh, this place is rich in iron, this is rich in copper or whatever.
And as far as we can tell, Michael, how much of the generation is editable, but like boundaries are... Digital complex, pretty much all of them, as far as we can
tell.
Editable. I said edible. It's like, you can try and eat your PC.
That tastes very good.
Oh my God.
But we're still learning it. It's just one that had popped up and I wanted to talk about because I thought it was such a powerful tool. And it's free.
But can't argue with free.
Yeah.
And downloadable.
Yes. And if you do like it and you do have a few bucks, please join the send a few bucks to the creator. Their links on their site and everything under the About Us and
Patreon creators, especially those that create quality product like this, definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, because then that's how you lose it if you don't use it. So
it would be great. Just if this is super successful, it comes out and says, "Yeah, this is just a college project I wanted to do." And it stands out there. That's how Mortal Kombat started.
What? No way.
The first Mortal Kombat was a college project.
That's insane. I didn't know that.
It had two artists, a programmer, and a sound guy.
Get over here. Also, fun fact, they always generate the fatalities with stick figure drawings.
That's hilarious.
I know.
So I appreciate that was done.
So now that we're done fanboying over Mortal Kombat, is there anything else you guys would like to talk about as far as Asgard's fantasy map generator?
Nope.
Well,
what if they had like kind of an Age of Empires thought, like, is this civilization, like, are they behind in technology? Like, these people are ahead in technology. People have guns. Have they developed those yet?
You know, in hindsight, I kind of actually wish we did this episode, each of us at home, because then each of us could have shared our screens for what we just
generated. What we were discovering. Yeah, that's why I was asking the audience to join in and see what they find that's interesting. Because, like I said, I just learning the stuff, and it just, I was so blown away, I had to write an article and cover it on the show. So
I clicked a button and got hit by an asteroid.
For me, I really recommend this as, at least in my opinion, the best world-building tool for any Dungeon Master, Game Master, and it's an absolutely must-have in your toolkit. So,
yeah. Yeah, as Michael said, it looks like at a glance it only generates like one or two counts of a world map, but I don't know about you, though, in most campaigns, that's usually
that all seems pretty big. I think I had one that did generate three, but you're right. I mean, it still only does a few, one or two, maybe three continents.
But it's still a lot of detail.
But when you start to zoom in, you still have
there's got to be a pre-selector.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of filters you can turn on so you don't get stuff. Like, if you want a map that doesn't have any ice caps, you can disable that stuff, I think. So.
Yeah, because the one I just generated had the crap.
All right, I think that'll do it for our main topic today, Asgard's Fantasy Map Generator. Please check it out. Let us know what you think. Share your thoughts with us. And if you find a really cool feature buried in all that complexity, please let us know.
I got three.
You did get three? Yeah. As I said, I know I at least got three once, but
yeah.
All right. So before we move on to our owner tips and tricks, I want to take a second to talk about Fantasy Feasting. A really cool, I think they call it a sauce book. It is a recipe and D&D 5th edition source book. They give you 30 unique recipes to deliver to the delicious taste buds to your table during D&D or just at home by yourself. On top of giving you class options, magic items, feats, all that sort of stuff that goes with the 5th edition game. And they really did a wonderful job kind of tying all the flavor together. But it's, anyways, it is worth noting that it is created by Ashley May and Isaac May, and they are two best-selling authors on the DMs Guild and Drive-Thru. I've had the privilege of working on projects with Ashley, and she's got does amazing content. We've covered several of the books she's written for. I cannot recommend this enough. Make sure you check it out, especially if you like to cook.
They're best-selling authors, yes?
Yes.
Are they best-selling chefs?
They did actually have a team of cooks and professional chefs that's working awesome. On the project, which I thought was really neat.
I like what Jason Hoover says about these maps, is that the fact that they have seeds means you can share them.
Yes.
I didn't even think about that until he said that.
Yeah, oh, that's awesome. That's right.
Yeah.
That's a huge bonus. Thanks for interrupting the promo there, by the way.
The promo. It's a go get this fantastic cookbook.
Fantasy Feasting is live on Kickstarter as of this live episode. So please back it if you believe in it and you want something to add. I personally have the other D&D cookbook, and with the exception of the leeks, I was very impressed with it. Yep. I don't recommend leeks to anybody. It's trash.
I actually have the Dungeon Meister's Drink Master's Guide. So.
Oh, nice.
Dungeon Meister.
So I recommend checking it out if you're into that sort of stuff and you want to really spice up your D&D game in a new way. Head on over to rebrand.ly/fantasyfeasting and back it today.
I'm going to do that. I like the fantasy cookbook ideas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. And it also introduced more than just fast food to your diet.
Except for Heroes Feast. Yep,
we had a lot of that this weekend.
Wait a second.
We had a lot of food.
What does a gelatinous cube taste like?
Don't poison. Say jello. It tastes like acid.
Tastes like acid.
It tastes like a battery.
Yeah, I would imagine vinegar gone bad.
If a wizard with the slow time stop spell cooks food, is it fast food?
Get the fuck out.
All right, on to our unearthed tips and tricks.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our unearthed tips and tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
All right, I am really excited to talk about our monster variant. Now, if you don't know, all of our monsters are fully fleshed out, beautiful artwork, backstories, and different variety ways you can use them, which is available for our patrons. If you want to just pick up the details, because it's hard to remember what we're talking about here, you can go to our blog at critacademy.com/post and find this episode's blog.
Or if you want like alpha monsters, you can pick up our book, Memorable Monsters.
Oh yeah, that's a really good one too, which is very fleshed out. A lot of our monsters are fleshed out like that. But anyways, we're going to talk about the Savannah Huntress.
That sounds
badass.
Fun.
So to build this awesome warrior, you're going to start with the stat block of the green hag. Yes, I know. How are you going to make a warrior out of a witch? Easily. Turns out the green hag is just broken in a variety of different ways. We're going to lose most of its basic spells and its horrifying visage, I think was the other power. We're going to give it a couple new features, including a new spell list. It's going to use the... I just found an error in my own thing.
Yep. Specifically, we'll use mimicry, claws, illusionary appearance, invisible, and passage becomes Hunt of the Jaguar.
Okay. And awesome. Perfect. And we're going to give it a new feature called Searing Sun. The Huntress targets one creature it can see within 120 feet. The target must succeed on a Constitution DC 12 saving throw or take 1d8+3 radiant damage and be stunned until the start of the Huntress's next turn.
It's a flashbang.
Very much does that theme, right? So we're gonna the innate spell casting is going to be charisma. We're gonna give her at will powers, and I love this.
Yep.
Absorb elements. making her melee attacks that much more brutal. Should you be into the trying to blow her up with magic, we're gonna give her Earth Tremor because we're sticking to that desert, that savanna theme, and we're gonna give her Hellish Rebuke. Those are all at will.
So she basically has two options for reactions, and both of them are freaking amazing.
Got yes, it. And then once a day each, she can do Earth Bind. So all you little flying Aarakocras,
Earth Bind keeps you from flying.
It drags him to the ground.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And then Erupting Earth, which fits the desert theme as well.
And I'm guessing Hellish Rebuke is locked in at its lowest level.
At its lowest level, yes. Yeah. So it's only level one, so it's not super powerful, but it's a punishing punishment, right?
Yep.
Now.
And absorb elements helps make a good tank in some cases.
Yep. And really increases her survivability a little bit, and the bonus action she gets is a Pounce of the Jaguar, which the Huntress teleports up to 60 feet to an unoccupied. Oh my god, I gave a creature teleport at will.
You did!
You all are dead.
Which makes it that much easier for them to be an ongoing villain.
It's not, yes. Really, it's not really a pounce, though.
You know what? Nobody asked you. If you've seen the beautiful artwork, you would know why I called it that. She takes on the essence of the savanna, and one of those is a jaguar.
You know what's funny? At the end of every creature you create and you talk about it, you always look at us and say, so what do you guys think? I think it shouldn't be called Pounce for the Jaguar because it's not a pounce.
Well, so when I ask you what you think, I don't actually want an answer. Okay, I'm going to give you that. What would you call it then? Because behind her in the image is like a panther or a jaguar, like an after image in the art piece.
Dust so
that's
in the
what
wind.
Came to, oh, son of a bitch.
Dust in the wind.
that's a good one.
Something more along the lines of stalking. Stalking jaguar.
Stalking jaguar. Jaguar stalking. Okay, you know what?
Because a pounce is an attack. Stalking is you.
Well, if you teleport out of nowhere and stab somebody, that's an attack.
True.
But, okay, yeah. Yeah.
Jaguar's lunge. Not bad, Michael. Shots fired, man. All right. Overall, this is a pretty fun one. It is kind of strong. It definitely is at the top tier of its CR. But as Ian pointed out, the teleport means it can get away. It's very much like the stupid power all the Shinigami have from Bleach.
Oh, the flash step.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. But I think that makes for a very dynamic battle when they can just dart around and the players have to close the gap.
Hey, why are we there? Because he who lives and runs away lives to run away another day.
All right, I think that'll do it for our...
I never heard that before.
I think that'll do it for our monster. Brandon, would you like to tell us about our encounter?
Our encounter for this podcast today is on the run. That kind of fits the Huntress, doesn't it?
We'll see.
The characters locate a bounty board with a message from a local dwarven artificer named Prina...
Prina,
I'm going to say that. I'm not going to pronounce that last name. She is seeking the aid of any adventurers who are willing to help aid her in searching her warehouses for an experimental item that she has misplaced. Wow, that sounds suspicious.
Oh, it gets worse.
She offers a reward of one item in her warehouse as compensation.
Ooh, you're welcome.
This seems a fair offer to most. If the characters ask around in detail about why such a compensation, this seems why such a simple task has been up for weeks. A successful DC 15 intelligence investigation reveals that Prina's devices are more of a danger than they are useful. None who know her
technology, I suppose.
None who know her are interested in searching through her warehouse full of potential explosive items. Is it in here? Nope.
That's just my watch. Does your watch also is big? Because that clock is ticking really loudly.
The ticking sound is. That's a pipe bomb. The truth is, the item she is looking for is a newly created construct mimic.
Oh, yeah.
Construct mimic?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
An artificial mimic.
Oh, yeah.
She is seeking to make the ultimate device. Oh, my God. One that can change into any tool she needs. The problem is that she gave it a bit too much sentience. The creature is now hiding inside and is constantly changing form. What the... making it extremely difficult, not to mention dangerous, to poke around looking for it. Should the characters succeed, they are allowed one item from her collection. The items should be wishlist items appropriate to the difficulty of the challenge at the DM's discretion. That's
okay. Why? We're going to our workshop.
Why would you do
that? Small guess.
Reveals the
if some device. Of her devices in her warehouse are highly explosive, they must say casters really need to be careful about what kind of spells they use.
Well, and that was one of the things I wanted to discuss. Because they're so volatile, what is the side effect of randomly chasing this thing and knocking stuff over? Is everything going to explode? Is it going to go in a puff of smoke and now your barbarian is a chicken? You know what I mean? Like, the shenanigans you can do with this is so, like, it's limited by your imagination. You can play with every sort of spell. Oh, somebody is chasing after this thing. It hops into a thing. It hops through a door. And then when you open the door, you fall off a cliff. Because every time the door opens, it leads to a new plane of existence or something. I don't know.
Hey, does this push this like ether?
you know what do you think? Even better for this is if they're searching and they do find it and gives that potential run, the moment it turns that corny, you go, and now it's completely something different.
I love it.
So they turn the corner and it's like, ah, oh, now they got to search through everything again.
I was totally inspired by Transformers, obviously. But I think that this is a fun one, and it's not necessarily combat based, right?
Nope.
You're just supposed to capture this thing. I mean, maybe you can kill it, right? But the goal is to have a interesting encounter that's not just about fighting and slaying something.
All right.
So,
any other things on fighting. This? No. All
right, that'll do it for our encounter on the run. Good luck and have fun.
All right,
Michael.
Good.
Michael says, I would say a good way to assess potential dangers of the room would be that the DM would need to create a rough list of items in the room. That's certainly a way to do it. I would just make it up as I went, honestly.
Or you can make sure, or you can tell all the players on the boxes are labeled Acme.
Why are they all labeled the same? Well, our labeler got broken. It's the only thing it would kick out.
There's a reason why Prina's front room has a coyote rug.
All right, go ahead.
All right. Our match item today is the Bloodshard Dagger by Glorak. Oh, yes. It gets better.
This does come from D&D Beyond.
Yep. And it is obviously a dagger, going by the name. It's very rare, and it requires attunement by a creature that is not of the good alignment. That right there kind of sets up some possibilities.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That includes neutral, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The blades is a shard from a cruel material known as a bloodstone, a foul material found within the nine hells and used in the most fiendish of rituals. Though the blade is but a small broken shard of the stone, it still contains dark energies. And it, first off, it gets plus two attack and damage rolls.
I'm down.
Yep. And it also deals a extra 1d6 necrotic damage.
Even better.
But wait, there's way more. The power of the Blood Shard, whenever you make an attack or cast a spell that deals necrotic damage, and roll a 1 or a 2, you can reroll the die, and it must use the new result.
That sounds like a feat.
Yep, and it also probably applies to the weapon itself, too, for that matter.
For sure.
And there's also the Blood Sacrifice.
Sacrifice.
Time to die.
When you hit with an attack using this weapon, you can choose, I just choose, to activate its inner power. For a price. When you do, you suffer 3d6 necrotic damage.
Ouch.
And the weapon deals an extra 3d6 necrotic damage to the target. I assume these are separate rolls?
Yes.
Okay.
That's why I took it.
And you gain temporary hit points equal to half the damage dealt to the target. Once you use this feature, you can't use it again until you complete a short or long rest.
That's a gamble.
That's interesting because most magic items don't recover on a short or long rest.
Right. And on top of that, you could potentially actually hurt yourself more than your target.
Oh, dude, could you imagine rolling three sixes on your enemy or on yourself and three ones on your enemy?
Yeah.
Like, oh, Bill, I'm hurt. That's your fault.
Now, the final way this I can screw you over, the Curse of the Blood Shard. While you remain attuned to this weapon, your maximum hit points are reduced by an equal amount to your level.
That's bad.
When you unattune from the weapon, you suffer 2d8 necrotic damage. Now, we stress that this does not make it a cursed item. It just happens to have an effect that screws you over.
That's the worst breakup ever.
Okay. I just want to make that clear, since cursed items has their own share of rules that this does not draw from.
Yeah, I think it's called a curse, but it doesn't actually
give the curse
give features. The curse feature. Condition or feature or whatever. Yeah,
which I still think is BS that magic identifying magic item does not identify items by curse.
Yeah. Well, curse isn't magic.
So what do you guys think about
this? But you can still identify what the item is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Though identify spell doesn't identify curses. Isn't that stupid?
There's lots of weird things in this game. We love it, but it's weird things.
Like, nobody, you don't need an identify spell to identify an item. You use a short rest. I think the one thing the identify spell should do is be able to do that, and you can't identify that it's cursed normally. Mm. That's the way I run it. That's the way it needs to run. All right. What do you guys think?
Anyway.
I like it. It sounds fun. I would totally give one of my players this, just so I could watch them hurt themselves.
Yes.
You got to be careful. I mean, it's a powerful item, but it can backfire really quickly.
So you also might, for that matter, want to be careful who you give it to.
Yeah. But that's the point, right? That's why it does have the condition it can't be a non-good person.
Yeah.
So only somebody bad deserves payback or the karma, right? Or the karma that goes with it.
Carl.
So, Carl. All right. Carl? That'll do it for our magic item, the Bloodshard Dagger. Our Dungeon Master tip of the podcast is don't be afraid to have a throwaway adventure. Let's be honest. Having random fun side quests about unrelated hijinks shouldn't hurt an overall campaign. And the DM...
But it can.
It shouldn't. It shouldn't.
Shouldn't.
But doesn't mean it won't.
Yeah.
And the DM shouldn't be afraid to derail the campaigns themselves. Usually the players do it, right?
But I'll say they usually do a pretty good job of that by themselves.
Right. Get, Ludwig, yeah. Possniffer, Pot... Kobold Ventriloquist might well become a familiar face to the party. But it's very difficult at times to advance a story in an organic way, and there's no shame in the DM derailing their own campaign simply to allow the players to have some fun while they buy themselves time to develop that necessary organic adventure going forward. So
yeah.
This is a post that comes from Jacob Bork from CBR.com. And I really like this because, and I think we've stressed this before, if you have a really intense campaign, sometimes you need to have that moment where it's just the Witchlight, you know, carnival or something, you know.
Oh yeah.
You need a break from it. If you're always doing dungeon crawls, throw in a murder mystery. If you're always in murder mysteries, throw in a survival.
Mix it up. We have a murder mystery! Oh, click. Okay, I cast Speak with Dead. Dang it!
As you cast Speak with Dead, the skeleton raises, turns to you, and you inquire about its murder.
I don't know.
He was wearing a mask.
Or he was stabbed in the back.
Even too. Then, when I ran that game for Charles's birthday last year, they used that. And I specifically made sure to look that up before they did. Whatever you're talking to cannot speak full sentences. They can only say, small things. Like, knife. It's like, it was guaranteed it was a knife. Or that, yeah.
And they don't have to be truthful.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah,
They
don't have to be truthful.
All right.
No, they don't.
But anyways, the point we're trying to get to is sometimes when you're running your campaigns, and especially if you run out of an organic way to connect a plot to some other thing, being able to toss that kind of change into the game, maybe it's an opportunity to let somebody else run an adventure.
Yep.
While the DM takes a back seat and buys time to flesh something out.
You just gotta remember, if you're having an issue and your campaign is super serious and you want to have a little calm down, always remember this phrase is, what's the opposite of tragedy?
Comedy.
It's comedy. If something gets too lighthearted, make it serious, make it tragic. That's why you always see the happy and sad masks in theater. That's what we all do. In fact, in Curse of Strahd, when you read for first few sentences, it says, do not let jokes and laughter come into this campaign. This is supposed to be absolutely serious and terrifying. And if you make it more lighthearted, then they're not going to take it seriously. Like, really? That's not going to happen.
Well, and I think that's what the Witchlight book did really well.
Well, that and Don't Tell Me What to Do.
Don't tell me what to do.
Anyways, overall, it's a sound thing to consider when you're running your games.
Yep.
Don't always be hung up on whatever theme you're running. Don't be afraid to derail it yourself. I am and want to still run a Magic School Bus themed adventure.
Yep.
With a wizard.
Where are they going?
It's a stoner wizard named Mr. Drizzle. Okay.
For shizzle.
Yeah, Mr. Drizzle for shizzle.
What I want to do is like in what they do is they fly into a dragon and learn all about its anatomy from the inside of an ancient dragon.
Oh, that guy, Drizzle.
For Drizzle. Yeah, Mr. Drizzle.
And when you leave, the dragon's dead because you jacked up all of its insides by accident.
He comes out, you little bastards.
Yeah, you start off as like a Magic School Bus and you become Rick and Morty. Got it.
Yep, that's kind of the direction we were going. So anyways, definitely. Would you guys be interested in an adventure based on the Magic School Bus? Why? It would need to be the Magic School Broom or the Magic Academy Broom or something like that. They all ride on one giant piece of wood. Everyone's got big wood in there between their legs.
I think it would bind over really well. There's a lot of people who still love that show.
For shame. All right, but I think it would be a great way to explore like the things you don't see, like anatomy, right?
We're shameless,
anatomy
by the way.
Of a dragon. So, just a thought. I think that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip. We really derailed. That's the point, right? That's the point. Sometimes you have to. Mix a Magic School Bus and Osmosis Jones. Oh, yes. Plus 10 cool points to Michael. All right, so that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip. Don't be afraid and have a throwaway adventure.
Always curves to the left.
All right. Our player tip of the podcast is...
Don't be a dick!
And you can avoid dickitude by using the cursed hand. Brandon, what? Would you like to tell us a little bit about the cursed hand?
Vecna?
No, this... not a Vecna.
Besto curse.
The big... dragon got the shaft.
Bestow Curse, Bigby's Hand requires two different casters for this. Both of these spells require concentration.
Yeah.
For example, one caster would initially cast Bestow Curse mm-hmm. and choose Strength or Dexterity to impose disadvantage.
Ouch.
Go ahead.
And then the second caster would cast Bigby's Hand and use a Grasping Hand to move to the grappled curse target. The target now has disadvantage on grapple checks to try to get out. And every turn, the second caster can use the bonus action to deal an additional 2d6 damage to the target.
You are
Bigby's hand can deal damage?
Literally boned.
Yep.
Yeah.
And why aren't you being a dick? Because you are working together with your teammates.
Oh, way to tie that in. That is plus 2 cool points to Ian. That is awesome. I think this is so powerful. Yes, it requires two casters. But a bonus action for damage. I think does Bigby's hand's damage increase the higher you cast it?
I haven't looked at it in a while.
I think it does.
Probably.
But anyways, the point is a bonus action to deal extra damage that they can't stop. They can't stop it. It does it. Period.
How far?
That's huge.
Can you move Bigby's hand?
I don't know, like 30 to 60 feet, I'd imagine, if you give him about 10 seconds, if I can talk long enough to fill up that time. I'm sure that he'll have the answer for you. You know why?
Because
that's what heroes do. Oh my goodness. I tried to buy you 10 seconds. You took too long. What the heck, dude?
I keep her that up.
I was thinking if you're fighting on top of a building, you just take him and
Well, yeah, you could drop them, but then they might fly away or something. The damage is once, right?
Or you could jump into a spike pit.
Or you could drop them into a spike pit, or just make the whole hand drag them into a spike pit and then just up and down over the shaft.
Yep, does more damage. Yep, lasts for a minute and you can. Do more damage at higher levels.
Yes. So you can upcast it, making it more deadly. This is a hand job nobody's going to want.
Oh, no. When you make a melee attack with this thing initially, it deals 48 force damage.
Yeah. But you have to make an attack roll. This way, there's no attack roll. Once you get a hold of them, they can't escape, and it's automatic damage. Just a poor hand job. All right. That'll do it for our player tip of the podcast.
Don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude. By using the cursed hand job and working together.
Oh, man.
The cursed hand. I swear that was an accident. The cursed hand. All right.
I forgot how versatile this spell was.
Yes, it can do a lot of stuff. Bigby was very creative.
Yep.
So, anyways. Before we close out our show today, I'd like to just take a moment to offer our fancy RPG Fat Loot giveaway. We are giving away not one, but two prizes to a lucky subscriber today.
Yeah.
We are giving away our very popular Warlord class and our upcoming Gambler class. If you don't know, the Warlord is all about battle shouts, cries, and filling out that support role. Our Gambler is very much a DPS trickster, right along the lines of like a mix between Rogue and Bard. It, much like the Eldritch Knight, it does have one tier, or the Arcane Trickster, it does have one tier that is magical based,
yep.
But the rest is just about throwing cards, making waves, and making waves, really getting the most out of Gamble feature, which allows you to roll 2d6, and you have to target either a high roller, which gives you a benefit of scoring a crit on your next hit if you roll 2d6s. You might get a myriad of other benefits that you're rolling your gambles to try to acquire. So you got to see it kind of in play.
Yeah, I did.
Yesterday. It was a lot of fun. How did you think it went?
It looks like something that I would want to try because it looked like you had a lot of fun with it.
Oh, yeah, I did.
It was very gambit-oriented.
Oh, yeah. Dude, everyone facepalmed when they found out my character Punchline's daughter was named Betty. It was great. I loved it. That was a win. All right, who's our winner today?
Our winner today is Caitlin Henley.
The Gambler releases August 12th on CritAcademy.com. Please come and support us. Pick it up. Let us know what you think. Leave a review. All that jazz. All right. Ian or Brandon, what happens if they didn't win?
If you didn't win, too bad. You can go to CritAcademy.com.
That's what happens when you gamble.
Then you can subscribe. You subscribe to us. You can just go to CritAcademy.com.
Subscribe
to us.
Yep.
And you can get a chance to win. We give away stuff every week.
No, we don't.
Okay, most weeks.
Most weeks now.
Most weeks.
Yeah. It's a lot of extra work I was doing.
Some weeks.
Yeah. Probably once a month, maybe.
Some weeks.
Give or take.
If you want free.
Are you feeling lucky? Yeah.
You want free shit, subscribe.
That's it. You do get stuff just for subscribing. So,
it's true. You do.
Which was just easier than constantly emailing people. All right. Mostly I don't have time, right? I'm lazy. All right. So I want to do a quick shout out. We are going to two conventions soon.
Yep.
The first one is Grand Con, which we are going to be at, which is in Grand Rapids, Michigan on Labor Day weekend. Day weekend.
I was getting those two mixed up for some reason.
And then we are going to GooseCon on September 30th, which is in Ohio, Cincinnati, Ohio.
You've never heard of it. Well, that's because it's the first time they've had this convention.
First time, but it is run by the Majestic Goose Network.
First year.
So we're going to help support our pal over there. Adam DeWeese does good work. One Shot Onslaught, if you haven't checked him out. So
it's getting popularity pretty fast.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. You won't see me at the Grand Con thing. I got a baby that weekend.
Yeah, why would you have planned such an inconvenience to us? I'm kidding. All right, I think that'll do it for our show today. Thank you so much for joining us. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
I'm your co-host, Brandon. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blade sharp and spells prepared, heroes.
I'm trying to close this window. It's not letting me.
Are you sure you're doing it right?
I'm
It's not a PepCac problem?
A what?
Or an ID10T?
I'm going to hit you. Problem exists between computer and chair.
Yeah? Do you know what the other one is?
No.
An ID10T? Yeah, that's okay.
Oh, the idiot form.
Yeah.
Yeah.